Hey everybody, it's James Tiley and Johnny Fry. We are Team Blockchain, and at this point we are a normal, regular, routine, weekly show on CyberFM. And if you don't get the Team Blockchain newsletter, known as Digital Bytes, then you're probably not going to understand what we're talking about today. So you're going to want to figure out how to get that by reaching out to me, reaching out to Johnny. He'll tell you how. We have a great guest later, two of them really. And they talk about a wonderful subject that you've probably heard me talk about in the past, like in Atlanta. We'll get there, but first, I want to bring Johnny on, go over the newsletter itself, and this is how we do it. Welcome, Johnny.
Hi, James. Thanks very much. Nice to be back on the airwaves with you, and thank you for all those listening in to the Digital Byte Show, which, just as a recap, it's a weekly analysis looking at how, where, and why blockchain technology and digital assets are being used. And we take examples from different industries and different countries and just try and give people a bit of insight and some real examples of what's happening. And in the weekly analysis that James referred to, Digital Bytes, we email it out every Wednesday, and it has lots and lots of hyperlinks. So when we talk about the IMF, the International Monetary Fund, we'll give a link to that. Or if we say that, you know, we're talking about the sort of shadow economy and the fact the world GDP is 82 trillion. Well, who said that? Well, we give you a link straight into the World Bank, which talks about it. So that's what we do. But yeah, and if anyone wants a copy, contact obviously James at CyberFM, or you can find me, J-O-N-N-Y, Johnny Fry, on LinkedIn. And happily, we'll send you a copy of the weekly analysis. But yeah, so this week, James, we looked at a couple of different topics, and one of the ones we were looking at was digital currencies. And here we were really thinking about central bank digital currencies and potentially stable coins. And there's been a lot of talk about
this more and more often.
Yeah. Well, the Bank of International Settlement, which really sort of looks after all the central banks around the world, you know, they've been, they recommend members, 80% of their members have got projects or they're looking at it as a topic. You know, do they actually launch a central bank digital currency? Some already have. In the US, you may have seen they actually have made an announcement saying that it looks pretty much like the Fed is going to give the responsibility of stable coins. These are basically some sort of digital asset, digital token, digital currency, backed by fiat. So in the American example, obviously backed by the US dollar. We might have one backed by pound sterling or Japanese yen or Swiss franc or euros. But they've been trying to work out which regulator, and it looks like the SEC will actually be responsible for making sure the introduction of these things are as smooth as possible. But as I said, a lot of people have been focusing on, if you like, stable coins and central bank digital currencies. And their focus has been, well, we're doing this because it's going to be faster or it's going to be cheaper than actually currently the way money's moved around. But one of the things which increasingly seems to be a challenge for all economies around the world is this shadow economy or the informal economy. And in some countries, you know, Zimbabwe, for example, they reckon it could be as much as just under 70% of the economy is actually doesn't go through, if you like, the normal channels, and it tends to be run on cash. India, which is a huge country with, you know, well over 1.2 billion people, they reckon about 60% of the economy is run on cash. And the problem with that, then it means that a lot of the transactions don't get reported. It means then the governments don't get the correct tax take. And according to, you know, statistics that we've managed to find from, you know, the World Bank, they reckon that the shadow economy could be worth, you know, somewhere around about 15%, which is, you know, at least $2 trillion a year of the economy, which is not reported. And that's $12 trillion. And then, you know, you do the maths in terms of, you know, the tax take. But if it was just, you know, 20% of that is being lost out by the revenue, you know, that's a huge, huge, nearly $3 trillion a year of tax, which isn't being collected. And the reason that a central bank digital currency or a stable coin, stable currency is can help address that is that it means that the information as people transact and move money around to pay for goods and services, it means it's recorded. And there's no reason why the governments can't say we want access and be able to know. We don't necessarily need to know all of the details, but we want to know and want to make sure that people are paying the tax. Or maybe even in time, they use smart contracts and say, when a transaction happens, we don't necessarily need to know what the transaction was, but can you make sure you deduct the tax that's due? Now, all of this is a little bit big brotherish and people think, yeah, but where's my privacy? But there's got to be something done. People have got to pay the right tax because, unfortunately, I know it's a bit of a provocative statement, but I suggest that probably every single one of you listening to this show today are part of this shadow economy. We've all gone into a bar or a restaurant and said, thank you very much. Great service. Here's, you know, £20, $20, 20 yen, 20 bucks as a thank you. Maybe someone's washed our car or cut our hedge or, you know, we've just, as a thank you, given money to people. And it's all those little bits of money all add up. And that's why the shadow economy is as big as it is, James.
So the tips and the gratuities not being reported.
Yeah.
In America, we tend to tip 15 to 20% as a rule of thumb, you know, for services. Yep. When they file their taxes, they're supposed to report that. There's no hand-holding or arm twisting to ensure that they do, but they're supposed to. So I easily see how, yeah, that would be a major contributor to the shadow economies.
Yeah. But it's interesting. There's a Dutch fintech think tank called DGEN, D-G-E-N. And they reckon that in sort of just a few years, at least three or five countries in Europe will completely replace the national currency with a central bank digital currency. And they were looking and gave examples of what's been going on in Bahamas, in Sweden, where the Swedish retail council has forecast that 50% of all its high street store members will say, we are not going to accept cash. And as soon as 2025. Now, I don't know about in America, but I've been to a number of events here in the UK. And I think we mentioned this before at the cricket recently. It's you know, a funny game that we play in England. I know the Americans aren't huge into it, but we love it. You know, you go to Lord's and a big sign's up, no cash here. Everything had to be on a debit or a credit or paid digitally. And we've got coming up in the Winter Olympics in February next year, the Chinese are talking about launching their central bank digital currency, the digital yuan, where they've been doing lots and lots of trials, and they're looking and hoping that it'll all be ready for next February in Beijing for the Olympics. And we're going to see, you know, that being rolled out. So you'll have a digital wallet and you'll be able to buy, you know, tickets or food or drink or souvenirs using this new Chinese digital currency. So this isn't something that might happen. This is something which is very much going to happen. And it's not just about cutting the costs. It's a new tool for governments to be able to have more control over their economy. And it's also a tool for corporate treasurers that they'll be able to have greater access to information and give greater transparency of their cash flow, which could be really important for their creditors or maybe their shareholders. They'll be able to maybe pay their coupons on their debt or their dividends to their shareholders. They'll be able to pay that digitally. And those payments will be based on the number of weeks or number of days that people have held the shares or held the bonds, as opposed to the fairly archaic system we have at the moment in most equity markets, where companies pay a dividend every 6 months, and it's just whoever is on the share register at that time. There's no account for how long you've held it, just if you're on there on the ex-div date, which is fairly archaic way of actually carrying on and paying people an income. So lots of change coming, and very much central bank digital currencies and stable coins are going to be very much at the heart of that.
Yeah, and I believe that the user friendliness is going to be what will make it work. We have there's a concern there personally. If I was to editorialize, I'm afraid that if the governments did not get involved with creating a, you know, obviously the way it used to be, it's an American dollar, it's a British pound, and I was concerned that we were going to become the Facebook dime.
Yep.
We can't have some private company do better in terms of adoption of digital dollars, because we have enough trust issues as life goes on anyway. Could you imagine if it wound up being a company?
Well, arguably, it was back in June 2018, as you say, Facebook kicked off their project Libra, and they said, well, we're going to bring out this currency. And, you know, they came under so much criticism. And obviously, you know, today's quite interesting because, you know, here we are on, what's the date today? Friday the 29th, isn't it? 29th. And Facebook have actually announced their last night, they're going to rename their holding company, Metaverse. Meta. Will we see now Facebook have another go at launching some sort of digital currency? Because what people maybe don't realize that Facebook, with their 2.8 billion monthly users, that's three times the population of the G7 economies. So if we started seeing people using a face coin, then it could quite easily become a very, very dominant form of payment for the world. And, you know, there's a lot of people wouldn't want that. So I absolutely agree. The governments have got to get themselves organized. And they are. There's a lot of work going on. Earlier this week, I was actually part of an event here at the Houses of Parliament in the UK, where we actually had the chief economist and one of the co-founders of Facebook's Diem project. And we had Commissioner Pearce from Hester Pearce from the SEC. And we were talking about this very topic, and because people are really, really interested in what does it mean for me? What does it mean for my company? And why do we need it? I've got cash. I've got debit cards. Why do we need to go digital? And I think the simple answer to that is just look around in your daily lives. And in the UK, we have 1 million people that don't have bank accounts. Across the world, there's 1.7 billion that are financially excluded from the, if you like, from financial services and banks and the like. Yet, according to, again, the World Bank, they claim that of those 1.7 billion people, two-thirds, 66% of them, have a mobile phone, which means that if they could move money on their phone digitally, they don't need a bank account. But it does then mean they can start receiving money, perhaps direct from a customer, and they can start having small loans, they can get insurance, and all those things perhaps we take for granted when we've got our bank accounts. Well, there's a lot of people out there that don't have bank accounts, and they perhaps, you know, can have a bit more security, and they can have a, you know, a bit more inclusion, which surely that's got to be a good thing, you know, for society as a whole. So it's not just about making money. I think there's a wider issue around the sort of environmental and social corporate governance that we need to sort of be mindful of.
Yeah, I agree 100%.
Yeah. So the other article we looked at just quickly before we go to the break, because after the break, we've got Sarah Bowman and Shishan Krukshana from Baker Botts, and they're a US law firm historically from Houston, and they're going to be looking and talking about how blockchain technology is being used in the sort of energy industry and how it's giving greater sort of transparency and therefore trust, so that if you say you want to buy power, renewable energy, then they can prove, you know, these power companies will be able to prove where it's come from. But they also talk about environmental and social corporate governance and how that's important. Again, how the technology is being used to be able to sort of track the ESG credentials. But the next article, a little bit tongue in cheek, and it was called A Regulatory Game, Red Light, Green Light. And this was it really came out in discussions with a company called Checked that do a lot of work using blockchain technology and around identity. And they took, and I'm sure you've seen it on Netflix. There's about 150 odd million people that have seen it. The Squid Games, James. Have you seen it yet?
I can't wait for season two. I got theories.
God, dear, and this, yeah, God. If ever you want to see a film and think, you know, what would mankind do for money? And yes, right. It's a little bit gory without giving away the plot, but it's incredible human nature and how it can react. But the reason they brought it up was obviously they were talking about, if you like, the different types of regulatory standards and the way they're regulating different jurisdictions. And being very simplistic, it's red light, no, you can't do it. And a good example there, I suppose, is China. They're now saying you can't do anything with cryptocurrencies. But I have a funny feeling that's all going to change. But that's another story. Green light. where you've got places like Estonia, who are very, very supportive, very positive. You've got places like in America, like Wyoming, they are very supportive. Malta, Gibraltar, Singapore, Australia, interesting, really at the cutting edge of some of the stuff that's going on. And then obviously, you know, when they're saying player eliminated in Squid Games, then it's they come to a rather nasty, very dramatic end. But over here, perhaps, or back in the real world, what we're talking about there is, you know, you're eliminated if you're doing something which is illegal. So from a US perspective, you know, if you're selling securities and you're not regulated, well, you could end up in prison. Ditto in, you know, many of the other countries across Europe. So, you know, getting involved in digital assets, getting involved in cryptocurrencies. And when we use the terminology digital assets, James, we're not just talking about crypto. We are very mindful that crypto is one part of it, which is, and funny enough, it's going to be a very small part. You know, crypto market is only $2.5 trillion. Whereas we look at something like the bond and the debt market, you know, the bond markets, they issue $7 trillion worth of debt every year. And as we start seeing more of that becoming digitized and on a blockchain, that's going to be a digital asset. And there's all sorts of advantages and reasons why it does it. So we're very focused on digital debt, digital equity, digital commodities, digital real estate, and digital currencies with stable coins. So, but you've got to make sure you've got your regulatory lawyer to hand to make sure that you are mindful of all the relevant rules and regulations.
I've always argued myself that, like in a real world, you could use NFTs. You know, an NFT would yeah. be a wallet per se that would hold the title to your home and your cars, your insurance identification, right? It's a digital asset that's tangible electronically, but not a currency, although it reside on a distributed ledger.
Well, and funny enough, one of the companies that we've been doing some work with, Trust Me Property Exchange, TPX, they're saying exactly what you've just said there, James. And they're saying, well, you've got your home. Effectively, you can create a digital version of that, almost like an NFT. And you could then link that to your debit card. So if you want to go and get a coffee, or you want to get some gas, or you want to, you know, buy a new car, like I understand you've just taking ownership of a new electric car. And I thought you're an old petrol head.
Yeah, I don't know where I stick this little pipe in the corner of the car somewhere, but I did grab myself a little cool looking, it's a BMW i3. It has like suicide doors, so it has a little of a Lincoln Continental throwback. Yeah. But I am contributing to the greener world.
Wow. Well, and so I'm just finished. So TPX, what they're saying is that we'll digitize your house, not in terms of creating a token or anything like that, but have your ownership on a digital record. And then if you want to go and buy, you know, a new car or some fuel to put in it, or pay your bills, then you'll be selling off a little bit of your house. So you turn your house almost into your bank account. And you can sell off up to 49% of your house. And you think, well, who's going to buy it? Well, maybe I fancy buying, you know, $10,000 worth of property in Florida or New York or California. And how else do I do it? In a fund? Well, they're expensive, and most of them trade at a discount to the current price. So I think we're going to see the ongoing digitization of society. And well, look, James, I'm preaching to converted. Look what you've done. I think you're the first radio station in the world to actually give people a loyalty point, give them cryptos just for listening. How unique is that?
That's right. If you're listening to this show right now, you're making a little bit of money. And now you've got me thinking I want to go throw my Disney timeshare on Binance.
Yeah, well, why not? So all sorts of possibilities, but there you go. But if anyone wants to get a copy of this weekly analysis, then contact James or I, and otherwise we'll be back on the radio next week. But before we do that, after the break, we've got we've got Baker Botts, who'll be talking about how they're seeing blockchain technology being used in the energy industry, and we've got Shashank Krishna, who's a partner there, and Sarah Bowman, or SJ as she likes to be called, talking about how the technology is being used very much in the energy industry, which is a big sector that law firm is very much involved in.
Yeah, and you would think that certain people in certain car companies that have such a vocal internet presence would be more positive and contributing to green energy using this technology. Meanwhile, you found a law firm that just owned the whole subject. I mean, it's a great interview. And meanwhile, everybody's looking at other people for that type of knowledge. It goes to show you where the knowledge really is.
But what's great about it is they're not talking about what might happen. They're saying it's actually happening. I don't know. Shashank actually was talking about some of the deals because he's in merger and acquisitions. And some deals have been stopped over the last 18 months because of companies had worries about the environmental and social corporate governance credentials, i.e. the ESG credentials. And they were checking and holding that information. And they're saying increasingly that's being held using blockchain technology, which is it's great to see the technology being used in a very practical way rather than just talking about, oh, it's great for sort of, you know, transfer of value or something like that.
Well, yeah, okay, it's a great show. I look forward to that one. That's after the break.
Brilliant. Okay, well, we'll join you after the break. And thanks for listening to the first half of Digital Bike Show for this week.
Yeah, absolutely. And remember, if you need to get a hold of the email that goes out for the newsletter, just swing over to cyber.fm and stick our names in Google. Do what you got to do, and we will set you up. We do have to automate that. That's on my list of things.
We got to get digitized.
We got to become more technical.
James, you're going to put a picture of your new car on cyber.fm.
Oh, absolutely. All my cars are on my social media. I got the big opposite of green energy trucks and some sports cars, some imports, and hopefully the BMW will fit right in there. I used to have a lot of BMWs when I was younger, when I was trying to impress people. But they are fantastic cars. So we'll see how the 2020s have progressed.
Brilliant. Okay, well, we'll catch you after the break. Thank you.
Cyber.fm.
Hey, Johnny, it's we're back over here at CyberFM, the Team Blockchain. And you've brought us two guests this time. This is the first time where I've got two people I gotta learn from. You're really trying to make me get all in, huh?
We got two for the price of one. And even two for the price of one. Two lawyers on the phone, James.
Yeah, it's Sarah Beaumont, who is an associate over at Baker Botts, and a partner with her is Shashank Krishna, I hope I said that right, at Baker Botts. And they wrote an article for you. It's actually got a cool title to it, right? It's The Race to Net Zero, One Blockchain at a Time. So I'm really eager to hear what you drill out of them as to what they're referring to.
Well, brilliant. Well, thank you, James, and thank you, SJ, and Shashank for coming on the radio today, and also for your article. And it'd be great just to get a quick sort of overview from both of you, a little bit about Baker Botts, because obviously Baker Botts is predominantly, I understand, a US law firm, although you've got a big office here in the UK. Just a bit of background about you guys, and then we'll get into your article, if that's okay. So maybe as we'll be super politically correct, and Sarah or SJ, I know you'd like to be called, can you perhaps kick it off and go first?
Yeah, thank you, Johnny, and thank you, James. Great to be here. So Baker Botts was originally founded in Houston, actually, in 1840. So it's originally a US law firm, but now we've got offices across the US, Europe, the Middle East, and Asia. We focus on energy, technology, and life sciences. And we've got over 700 lawyers globally. Wow. I work in the London office. And I focus on energy and technology. I do sort of primarily corporate M&A work, and I've got a specific interest in blockchain and wider distributed ledger technologies, and also ESG matters, and where those two intersect is where this article came from, really. And with me today is my colleague and technically my boss, Shashank. So I'll hand over to him for his intro.
Oh, we've got the boss on the phone. That's good news.
hardly, Johnny. Thanks, SJ. Look, it's a very tough act to follow, SJ, my brilliant colleague. My name is Shashank Krishna. I'm a partner with Baker Botts. SJ's done a brilliant job of the introduction, so I wouldn't add too much to it. But I focus on energy transition matters primarily, development, financing, M&A across the world. I've now worked in some 50 countries around the world on various transactions and deals. And, you know, being an international law firm is good fun because you can pretty much work anywhere in any part of the world these days. So, you know, having offices, we do have offices around the world, but, you know, being a physical location is just a concept these days, which is what's reflected in our practice. But given a strong energy and technology focus, you know, it's a really interesting place for us to be in, you know, marrying up with the two worlds, the way things are changing. It's a very exciting time to be in both industries. You know, we're seeing new industries and sectors being built right in front of our eyes. So exciting times.
So I'm interested. Obviously, we've got COP26 coming up, the summit in Glasgow. End of the October. Well, it's next week. You know,
yes.
Joe Biden was in the Vatican today on Friday, talking to the Pope, no less. So obviously getting a blessing from him. But, you know, let's be honest, most of your clients are energy companies. And aren't they the ones responsible for all this terrible pollution with their cars and trucks and burning gas and oil, you know? And yet, what can they do? Surely they can't just stop business. How can they sort of clean their act up then?
Well, I think that's a really great question, Johnny, because, and it's not just energy companies, it's the whole world needs to come together and we all need to change our habits, whether it's consumers, business, governments, international organizations, and we all need to work together. And that's the point of COP26, really. We can get over 200 countries in the world to agree to certain targets and to behaving in a certain way, then hopefully we can get somewhere. But in terms of sort of energy companies, it's a very interesting point because we've got all these renewable energy sources. You've got sort of wind, solar. But of course, you know, Europe has very unreliable wind source. It isn't constant throughout the year. Certain parts of the world, are not as sunny as others, not naming names, but Britain. And
especially, you know, Manchester.
Well, yes, Manchester is pretty cold. But also you've got sort of green hydrogen and things, and all those are really fantastic and they are clean energies and that is great. But the infrastructure at the moment is obviously developing in those sectors, but we are using, you know, I think it's about sort of half at the moment is based on fossil fuels, and that infrastructure is already in place. And there are ways of cleaning up those processes. As we talk about in our article, we've got there's ways of reducing the emissions through sort of carbon capture, utilization and storage. And there's other things that can be done. And what you've got to think about is the overall carbon footprint of the whole process, because if you're manufacturing new pieces of equipment, new bits of infrastructure, well, manufacturing is a huge emitter of greenhouse gases. So is it really the best idea to completely make that switch to renewable energies, or is it better to use the things we have and to use those processes we have and to, you know, clean up those processes? And blockchain technology is a fantastic conduit to accelerate that process. And all the big energy companies are really, really focused on using distributed ledger technologies to help ease with that low carbon economy preparedness.
Okay, so how are they using a bit of software to cut their carbon footprint? I'm just trying to think of the connection there.
Sure. So, for example, if you are using if you are declaring that a particular source of energy is come from a renewable source, the customer says, I would like my energy from a renewable source. How do you prove that? Well, you have guarantee of origin certificates, but there's a huge issue with those certificates being double counted. Blockchain technology, with its tamper-proof nature and the fact that you can't sort of retrospectively amend things, provides a verifiable, secure ledger that makes customers it lets them know that they are in fact buying a particular energy that is from energy sources, renewable energy sources. That's just one example. There's many others.
Okay, so you read of companies like Google who claim that they're net carbon zero, or certainly will be in a few years' time. And the reason they could make such a claim, even though using lots and lots of energy for all their sort of data centers and offices. But they could make that sort of claim by saying, well, we're only going to buy our energy from a renewable source. And therefore, the power companies can say, well, we can prove to you it's come from a renewable source because we've tracked where that power's come from. Is that a simplistic way of looking at it?
Well, that's the idea. That is certainly the idea. Yeah, sorry, Shashank.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Absolutely, John, you're spot on. Exactly. A lot of, you know, likes of Google and a lot of others are now increasingly insisting on 100% renewable energy sources for their offtake. And that's been a big factor in growth of renewable energy across the world too. An important part is tracking to make sure that, you know, it's actually, you know, what it says on the tin is right. But also, you know, it's also used for, you know, tracking emission reductions, the technology is being deployed. When people are saying that they're reducing emissions, it's actually correct, especially in the carbon offset market. Historically, there've been a lot of issues in just making sure that the carbon reduction certificates are authentic, which are then used for trading, which is where the blockchain comes in. It's also starting to play a big role, and people are thinking about using blockchain to finance clean energy projects. Through, you know, peer-to-peer trading platforms, allowing people to trade renewable energy. But stepping back from all of this, one thing to consider, it goes back to one of the points that you made earlier, you know, the modern world is built on energy. And all energy companies, whether renewable, oil and gas, have had a big role to play in the way our world works right now. And they also have a very important role to play in how we transition to it. And a lot of companies are doing it, you know, big oil companies and others and investors and financiers are really thinking about these issues. You know, likes of Total, BP, Shell, a whole bunch of others, Chevron, they all are doing renewables energy transition work. And that's important. I'm sorry, there are lots of names out there. But the amount of skills, technology, and knowledge that they have developed over the course of the last, you know, 200 years or so, you know, that we need that and they are part of the solution. So I really see this, especially in 2021, a year when, you know, the industry across the board is coming together to find solutions and it's working.
Okay. And the other thing, because both of you are involved in M&A, and I'm interested because SJ knows this, I know. I used to be CEO of an asset management business and to be, I'll be quite honest with you, you know, 10, 15 years ago, you couldn't even spell ESG, let alone know what it stood for. But the reality is now, and correct me if I'm wrong, when you're doing M&A activity, people are interested in looking at the environmental social corporate governance, i.e. ESG, your carbon footprint. Look, they're interested in that almost as much as the investment. You know, is this business I'm going to buy or acquire, is it sustainable? Is that true from the stuff you're seeing?
Absolutely. That's 100% true. And we're seeing a lot more ESG questions in the due diligence process. As the regulatory sort of standards around ESG reporting sort of grow, those sort of factors are a lot more they're a lot higher in the consideration list when sort of evaluating a transaction. But I think, you know, this has been growing, sort of it's really exploded over the last sort of 2 years, this real focus on ESG. But with the COVID-19 pandemic, people have been a lot more interested in how the S, if you like, you know, how people are being treated, how the environment around them is being treated. And yeah, I think, you know, the climate change is part of that, but it's much, much wider than just the environment. A lot of people think of ESG as just being environment, but it's much, much wider than that. And I think, you know, this is a really positive change, and, you know, it's something I'm really passionate about myself. And, you know, look, if you're looking at ESG reporting or carbon emissions reporting or anything like that, the wonderful thing about using distributed ledger technologies is that you can prove it, and you have these sort of secure, reliable, basically ledger of the transactions. And especially if you're working across multi jurisdictions, you can transfer information from one side of the world to another really, really quickly. And yeah, I think we're going to see a larger convergence of blockchain and ESG in the coming years.
And okay, Johnny, what's also...
Yeah, please go.
Sorry, just to quickly add to that, what's also happening is, there used to be a checklist-based approach till a couple of years ago when ESG was just considered a box to tick for many companies. But the course of last 12 to 18 months, we have seen a real, deep dive into ESG matters, a real substantive due diligence where people are asking very hard questions. We moved from level one to level five in the course of last 18 months. And I've seen, both SG and I have seen deals being called off because people are not comfortable with ESG risk.
Oh, really?
Which has been a big change. People are genuinely asking questions about, what are the governance policies? What are the social factors? Climate risk, have they been properly disclosed? Are they being priced properly? So level five questions. And there are no easy answers, to be honest with you. It requires a lot of judgment and experience to say, whether to go ahead or not with a deal. But that's a good sign. We are all evolving here.
Well, hopefully it means the deals are going to be more sustainable rather than sort of quick rich, make a quick buck and then move on type of deals.
Absolutely.
But I'm also interested in, we're talking about blockchain. In theory, we sort of kind of know what we're talking about, although I find the more, I've only been doing it 6 years, and I find the more I find out about it, the less I seem to know. But it must be quite a challenge when you're talking to, the boards of some of the biggest companies in the world. And these are very, very busy ladies and gentlemen. And they must look in the first instance, you start talking about, blockchain, DLT, smart contracts. They must sometimes be a bit, how up to speed are they? How familiar are with some of these sort of acronyms and terms? Or does education still vital in overall when you're talking to them?
Do you know, I think in the last couple of years, these terms have become a lot more mainstream and a lot more people know lots about it. But there are clients who are just really, really interested in it and are constantly asking us, what does this mean? What does it mean for us? How can we use it to enhance? But I think, the key thing is just getting over the hurdle that blockchain and crypto is somehow this dark web and dark network thing. So I think that's kind of a hurdle at sort of a board level of people, is that sort of reputational thing, because obviously we're talking to like the largest public companies and they want to make sure that reputationally, if they're getting involved in something, that it is legitimate. I think people are starting to understand it more. People are becoming more interested in it. And hey, look, NFTs seem to be the flavor of 2021. So I think the trend is only going to continue.
Johnny, one of the very funny developments is that a lot of senior board members and others are now being schooled by their children on some of these things.
Join the club.
And you're
my IT consultant's turning up this afternoon to see me.
No, it's a great process, and look, there is it'll take some time, especially because, as you can imagine, especially in the energy industry, things need to be, sometimes people tend to be a bit more conventional, and for a good reason. You got to keep the lights on, you don't get too adventurous very quickly. But again, the last 12 to 18 months, we have seen a real trend where people are, really asking deep questions. Why are we doing things in a certain way? Why are we, what's business as usual? How do we change? How do we adapt? Yeah. And there's been a big movement. I've seen change in the last 18 months in the industry, more than what's happened in the last 20, 30, 40 years.
Well, yeah, Noel, I'd agree with that. I'd agree. James, I'm conscious of time. Have you got any questions you'd like to ask our learned friends? I don't think they've got their barrister's wigs on today, but I'm sure they'll be able to help you.
Well, quickly, I attend a lot of conferences and conventions, especially throughout the few years with Cyber FM Radio. And when I speak, I'm a car guy, by the way. I used to do a show with Pierre, who was an auto racer, and we'd always wind up talking about cars. I am a car guy by every stretch of the imagination. And I've always used an example in the blockchain world where I envision a future where two electric cars are on the highway and the one guy is running out of juice. And at some point, we've allowed wireless charging to be extended, by a quarter mile, something like that. And I envisioned this network where a guy in a BMW i3 could be on the network and say, well, I have 20 amp hours available to charge. And another guy an exit away says, I'm about to run out. I need at least 10. And on their dashboard, they click a little button, they negotiate, they exchange a crypto. We'll call it Power Coin, right? I'm just making that up. And that became a decentralized, motivated reason for green energy while solving a real-world problem with electric vehicles. And everybody always tells me, you need to do that. What are you doing in radio? Go create that. And it's funny, just because I'm a car guy, it's how I try to explain to people how blockchain technology applies to, you know, virtually any scenario. Now, with that said, I've been using that theory now for years when I talk. On Wednesday, I purchased my first electric vehicle. It arrives Monday. And I took some time out between, I did it all day yesterday, and I'll probably be doing it all this weekend. So probably all weekend, I'll be researching. I didn't realize that I have to know different power levels, 7.7 kilowatts per hour, 11.2, 50 kilowatts per hour, if I want to go hardcore. And it's a whole new world for me. So my question to you guys is, when you're, it sounds to me like you're on the other end, not so much the consumer end, but we'll say the provider to these electric car companies, if we talk about transportation.
Yeah.
Are you finding that same learning curve to be a challenge? Because I'm a pretty well-rounded guy, I would think. And I'm stumped a little bit this weekend.
Which car, by the way, if I may ask?
BMW i3.
All right, congratulations. Fantastic.
I'm a big BMW guy, and I said, you know what? I'm going to go electric. I got trucks. I got other cars. But it's time for me to grow as a human.
James, that's a good point. That's an interesting question. I think it's a process. It will take a bit of time for the systems to evolve and for things to settle down. It's all a bit fiddly right now. You know, it's very, very early days. You're talking about, you know, imagine hundreds of years ago when people first found oil. You know, it was a different world. It was initially called rock oil, or it's almost like a snake oil when it started to be sold, because people had no idea what this is about and, you know, how does this thing work. And it took some time for an industry to be settled, things to be standardized, you know, for the quality measures and all that things to come in place. And that took several years or decades. I think we're in such early days where things are still evolving and settling down, that, but the speed of pace of change has really increased. But we reckon in the next couple of years, this is all settled down. And you know, some very smart people are working on solutions for this, for, you know, standardizing and making it easier. So watch the space. We're actually directly involved in some of these aspects of the industry, so we can't really talk a bit more. But you'd be surprised, you know, in the next couple of years when we have this conversation, you'd be surprised how much things have really improved and settled. I don't know if that answers your question.
No, it does, because like I was saying, if a guy like me, who's all about horsepower and speed and performance, and I finally jumped into the electric game, just, you know, what is my contribution? 0.00001%, right?
But it all adds up.
It all adds up. More people like me.
Every little helps, exactly.
Right. More people like me are going to start migrating to clean, renewable energy. That learning curve is going to have to go away.
Yeah. But we're also going to need the energy companies to help us, and that, from the sound of things, they're already on that journey to sort of produce more cleaner energy, but also be able to prove, by having, obviously using DLT and blockchain systems, to be able to prove that the energy is clean, or the businesses that they're acquiring are what they say they are, and they don't leave a terrible sort of footprint.
Right. Absolutely. Right.
I think in the next 5 years, this will be a complete plug and play industry. You'll be surprised by how smooth the whole transition is going to be. It's a bit like, you know, when the mobile phone first started and when the whole industry moved to iPhone and that level of comfort, you know, it's going to be much faster right now. And you wouldn't have to think, and, you know, customers won't have to think about these issues at all. It would be complete plug and play. That's where we're headed. That's where a lot of people are working. Europe is probably ahead in the game than compared to the US and elsewhere. But, you know, the adoption base has changed dramatically.
Yeah. Brilliant. Okay. Well, look, James, I'm just a bit mindful on time. SJ and Shane, thank you very much for the article. Thanks for coming on the show today. Found it really, really interesting, and be good to get you back on perhaps sometime early next year and give us an update of how things are evolving and developing. And be interesting to sort of look at the differences that you're seeing, as you say, between what's happening in the States and what's happening perhaps in other jurisdictions around the world. But as I say, maybe that's a story for another day. James, that's it for this week. You know, thank you very much for co-hosting with me. And as ever, if anyone would like to get a copy of Digital Bytes, then please just contact James at CyberFM or myself. We're both on LinkedIn. James obviously is James Tyle, James Tyle, and I'm Johnny Fry, Jonny. Fry. So we'll be back on the air next week. But again, thank you to our friends at BakerBots for coming on the show today.
Thank you for having us. It's been a pleasure.
Yeah, it was a great subject to have.
Thank you, Johnny. Thank you, James. Our pleasure. And look forward to connecting again.